Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So a lot of talk around the filibuster, a lot of talk about doing away with it on the progressive side, you know, claiming it, you know, harkens back to Jim Crow, which I can't argue that it doesn't so much. But there are those who are saying, look, you know, we need to keep it because, you know, Republicans will maybe someday be in power. We may need it to stop their horrible things. Lots of interesting discussions on both sides, and here to share some thoughts on his most recent piece over at the Washington Monthly, Where Are the Filibusters?, written by Bill Scheer, contributing editor there at Political Magazine, also there at the Washington Monthly. He also does the fabulous podcast, When America Worked, and the DMZ. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Always great to talk to you.
So it's an interesting question. I got to be honest. I read your piece, and my thought was, yeah, where are the filibusters? Is the threat of them just enough to not move any legislation? Walk me through it.
Well, I say a lot of folks assumed we'd be in, you know, mortal combat already in the Senate. And I mean, just look at the 100 days. I mean, wherever you stand on the filibuster question, like, these are just the plain facts. 100 days of the Biden administration, 13 bills have passed the Senate. Biden signed 10 of them. I think the other three are going to come to his desk soon enough once they get through the House. And, you know, obviously, American Rescue Plan was by reconciliation. That was not bipartisan. There's also one other. There's a Congressional Review Act. That's a repeal of a Trump dereg thing that was technically bipartisan, but didn't get the 60 they didn't need to. All the other stuff is bipartisan. McConnell voted for it. It includes a $35 billion water infrastructure bill that passed last week. Anti-hate crimes legislation last week, waiving the rule to allow Lloyd Austin to be in the cabinet as the head of the Pentagon, extension of the PPP, small business loan program under the pandemic, suspension of Medicare cuts that would otherwise be automatic in the sequester. And now these are all small things. It's not the big stuff. It's not climate change legislation. It's not infrastructure. It's not immigration. But if the plan, the Republican plan, was to make everything as miserable as possible for the Biden administration, they wouldn't be doing this. They'd let the Medicare cuts go through. They let the small business go under, and they try to blame Biden for it, which was what they tried to do with Obama as much as they could. So that's the Republican side of the equation, I think you got to think about. Then the Democratic side, why isn't H.R. 1 on the floor? Why isn't the PRO Act on the floor? Why isn't the Equality Act on the floor? Why hasn't Schumer rushed those bills to the Senate floor, invited the filibuster, exposed the obstruction, and build up pressure for filibuster abolition or reform? Why isn't either side rushing to confrontation? And I think it's because both sides are worried that it won't be so easy to shift that blame and say the other guy is the one causing the obstruction. So everyone's kind of hanging on the edges of the arena, trying to see maybe we can get something bipartisan done here. Who's going to blink first? And that's leaving the Joe Manchin of the world some opportunity to say, hey, let's see what I can do to move the ball forward.
How much do you think this is Biden's leadership saying, you know, let's slow this process down, let's work where we can, because the idea is that we're trying to bring the country back together. We're trying to do some of the unity stuff.
I mean, I think Biden's genuinely conflicted. He's been a bipartisan figure his whole career, and I think he believes in his ability to, you know, mend the rifts, bring about consensus as much as possible, and depolarize the country. I think he very much wants to do that. But now, for the first time in his life, he's the actual president of the United States, and there's that inherent pressure, do something, deliver, go big. I think he wants to do both things. And we saw with the American Rescue Plan, push comes to shove, he'll go partisan and do the big thing. The question now is, on what things on the remaining to-do list does he have the 50 Democrats in hand so we can easily do that? Joe Manchin and others have said, wait a second, I'm not ready to go reconciliation on infrastructure. I want to see what I can get out of the Republicans. That, you know, everyone said, well, Biden has to force the issue, or Schumer has to force the issue. You bring something to the floor, without 50, you're the one with egg on your face.
Exactly.
So, and we just don't know how long the mansions of the Senate are going to insist they play out this string before pulling the plug.
Now, there are a lot of people who are saying, oh, we need to get rid of Manchin. We need to, you know, all of that talk, I'm sure you've heard it. But in a world where you get rid of Manchin, you have a Republican Senate.
I mean, there's no one else who can occupy that seat in West Virginia but Joe Manchin. And, you know, John Tester is not so easy to keep around in Montana. You know, Sherrod Brown's up in Ohio. That's going to be tricky to keep. And so there's this conflicting debate. What's it going to take for Democrats to have a good 2022? I mean, you know, midterms are often not good for the president's party in general. So what do you do to buck that trend? Deliver big? Well, you know, that there's an argument for that. But if you try to deliver big and you fail, that has downside risk. Maybe if you get that, you get some bipartisan deal. It's not as big as you would like, but it's something. You know, that can cut either way. I mean, the argument is, well, if you do something that's kind of milquetoast, kind of watered down, but nominally bipartisan, no one's going to care. They'll be mad at you that it wasn't big, and they'll blame you for it, not the Republicans. Possible. I don't deny that possibility. I think it's also possible that you get the 10 Republicans for, let's say you do $600 billion for infrastructure. It's not $2 trillion, it's $600 billion. That's sort of the low end of what Republicans say they would do. Democrats would grind their teeth that you settled for, you know, a quarter of a loaf. But how many Republicans will be mad that the Mitt Romney has got to call the shots and made Biden look good for delivering something, and then they stay home on election day? I mean, these Trumpers are mad at Liz Cheney for giving Biden a fist bump. How are they going to react if they give Biden a bona fide infrastructure win? So I say it's hard to know who's going to come out ahead in that circumstance. All I know is that Joe Manchin gets to call the tune right now, because you do need his vote whichever way you go.
Yeah, and the same thing with the two from Arizona. You need their vote as well. But you know, this is one of those things where I go, at some point, you've got to read the room and understand that if you don't get anything passed, 2022 is going to be a slaughter. So they do need to pass something by whatever means necessary. And if budget reconciliation is the path that you have to go, you got to make it big, because I think the only way Democrats hold on to power in 2022 is if people's lives are actually getting better, and the kind of optimism that we're seeing now about the economy and the direction of the country continues. That's the only way I see them holding on to the House and the Senate.
Well, there's a principle in negotiations called your BATNA. What is better? What's best alternative to a negotiated agreement?
Right.
So when you're going to have a negotiate with somebody, know in the back of your head, what can I do without this agreement? What's the best thing I can do without this agreement? In the American Rescue Plan, it was pretty clear. I can get $1.9 trillion without you. So why should I go down to $600 billion with you? Where's the upside for me? There is none. Hence, I'm not going to waste my time with you. With infrastructure, we don't know what the BATNA is. We don't know if Biden can get $2.3 trillion on his own. We don't know if Manchin will let him, or Sinema, or Mark Warner, or other, you know, relatively moderate, Angus King. These are all folks, a lot of folks who have said, we want pay-fors, we don't want deficit spending, and we're not sure about the kinds of taxes you want to increase. Manchin, I feel like Manchin's this big populist. He's been a very business-friendly character for most of his career. And he's saying flat out, I think 28% corporate income tax is too high. You got to bring that down, get your pay for somewhere else. So we don't know exactly what they will let Biden do by himself, let alone the parliamentarian. What will the Senate parliamentarian allow in a reconciliation bill? So that leaves Biden's, you know, the firmness of the ground he stands on kind of shaky. And if you get to a point where the Manchins are really drawing a line in the sand saying, I'm going to make you be bipartisan, I'm not going to let you go do reconciliation on this, then your choice is not between $2.3 trillion and $600 billion. It might be between $600 billion and zero. And if it is there, that's a hard argument for Democrats to bring to the public in 2022. I could have got you $600 billion, but I got you zero because I wanted to fight a good fight. I think that's a hard argument.
No, you're so, right. And that's been one of the things that we've been talking.
Sorry, go on.
No, that's been one of the things that we've been talking about why Democrats haven't brought bills to the floor for the Republicans to filibuster, because it's kind of like a sacrificial lamb. If you bring it and you can't get the 50 votes, or they do filibuster it, it's one of those things that eventually just falls off and you don't get passed at all. So what bill do you then want to throw out to the wolves that ends up being sacrificed to tick off your base? It's a tough call.
I mean, right now, Republicans, to take them at their word, and maybe you don't, everybody has to. I'm not saying they come with us with a reservoir of trust and goodwill, but they have said they would do upwards of, you know, close to $600 billion on physical infrastructure. They're not as keen on long-term care. They're not as keen on school construction, even though that is kind of physical. And the Democrat, if they want to get above that level, they have to really, really sell it. I mean, and I think Biden's trying here. I mean, and Biden in the State of the Union speech, or what technically not State of the Union, but his congressional address, trying to build that support around these broader planks. So the public is saying these are non-negotiable. The public is saying, I want that long-term care help. I'm trying to take care of my 80-year-old mother or father, and it's bleeding me dry, and it's making it hard for me to work. So to me, that is infrastructure, and I want that. If the desire is palpable, that strengthens Biden's hand. It strengthens the ability to say to Joe Manchin, you got to come with me on reconciliation for this if Republicans won't come on board, because the people are demanding it. I don't think Democrats can't assume you get one good poll number that kind of, you know, that kind of airily defines the bill, and that means that you got the public rock solid behind you on every line item. You got to work for that demand. And so if Democrats don't trust the Republicans on this, they have to make it easier for a Joe Manchin to cut loose by making the demand for the particulars of the bill very, very strong.
No, and that's one of the things that one of my negatives of his speech to Congress was that I thought there was too much in it. I think he should have stuck just to that infrastructure plan, should have just stuck to getting that pushed through and selling that. And then the call to action is, we need you to start. We need you to push. We need you to get out there and make us do what you want us to do. And kind of like the FDR style.
What's interesting to me about the speech, you know, most of the takes of the speech was how Biden went big. He made a proactive case for government. You know, it wasn't Bill Clinton, the era of big government is over. You know, there wasn't a lot of concessions in the speech itself. But at the same time, there wasn't a threat. He didn't say in the speech, work with the Republicans or I'll use reconciliation. Work with me or we're getting rid of the filibuster. He didn't do that. He was very nice to Republicans. He respected their counteroffer. He did not mention the price tag of the infrastructure bill, which by default means he wasn't drawing a red line there saying it has to be a certain level. He gave himself a lot of latitude to compromise. And I think he did that because he's not sure he can go without them, number one. I think to your point, he mentioned all those other things because he didn't want to hear a bunch of nitpicking and second guessing. Why didn't you mention this? Why didn't you mention my thing? Why'd you leave that thing out? What are you trying to say there? So he's trying to keep everyone at bay. I mean, there are certain things like, you know, to be honest, you know, $15 minimum, PRO Act. These things do not have 50 right now. There is no reason to believe he can get those things through reconciliation. He mentioned them because he didn't want to get hammered for not mentioning them. And I think that's why that speech was spread a little bit thinly, so he wouldn't get attacked for leaving anything off of the table.
Yeah, I go back to, we needed that call to action to get people motivated, and not pointing out, hey, call this person or that person, but call your representatives, call your senators, and push them to move on the kind of infrastructure, like you said, you know, caring for our most vulnerable and our seniors. That is going to be a huge thing in the coming years. I mean, it's a big thing now, but it's going to be even worse in the coming years. And if we don't start preparing for that now, crisis is coming.
You know, Reagan did that. You know, Reagan did, it wasn't the State of the Union, I don't recall, but he did give an address. I think it was an Oval Office address where he said, call your congresspeople. This is for one of the tax reform bills. Call your congressperson, put the pressure on them, and the switchboard was over flooded, and the Congress, you know, came on board. There are other times when presidents have done that and the congresspeople get mad. Don't you pressure me. Don't you tell me what to do. I don't got to listen to your minions. So, I mean, it can work.
Your minions? You mean the voters?
That's right. That's right. So it can work. It can backfire. Biden wasn't ready to push that button. He was trying to be much nicer and to try to keep Republicans in the room. Maybe at some point he's gonna pull the plug and play that card. He wasn't ready to do it last week.
Now we find out that Mitch McConnell isn't ready to do anything on Biden's infrastructure bill. Came out today like it was some big news story. I'm reading this story like for the first time we're hearing that Mitch McConnell isn't going to be on board with Biden's infrastructure story. Maybe the $600 billion he was on board with. And this is the thing that I have with our news media. I don't really think that was a breaking news story.
No, and let's remember here, McConnell's not irrelevant. But you don't need McConnell to get to 60. I mean, the person who's running point on this is Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. She's the person that Biden talked to. She's the one who put the plan together. She's the one that got 10 Republicans on board with, I mean, it's a thin counteroffer, but it's a nominal counteroffer. She did that, not McConnell. So, I mean, we'll see if she can keep those 10 on board if they're moving off of the initial bid and going higher and getting more specific. But if McConnell doesn't like it and Capito's got 9 others that are going to go with her, McConnell is completely irrelevant.
Going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Now, I didn't ask you what your position on the filibuster is. Are you a keep it or leave it guy?
I'm a keep it. I am nervous about what would happen if Democrats were the minority. And I'm nervous about what would happen if you get rid of it, Democrats pass great big things, and then 4 years later, zoop, they're all gone. Because it's just as easy to repeal them as there is to pass them, and how destabilizing that could be. And I hear folks that tell me, well, Republicans, they don't want to pass anything anymore. So it's an advantage to those who just want to obstruct. And I remember the Bush years. They wanted privatized Social Security. They wanted all that Paul Ryan stuff. And I think if you give them the opening to do it without a filibuster, they're going to take it next chance that they get.
Yeah.
So I think we got to – I mean, I'm not saying I got deep faith or high optimism, but there is the chance that the center of gravity of the country has shifted so much that you can pass some things with 10 Republicans. I at least want to give that a chance.
I'm with you.
Before we do something very dramatic.
I'm with you. But ultimately, I'm a 51 vote guy. I think ultimately you need to pass things. You need to get things done and let the voters decide. But we'll see where it goes. But Bill, I appreciate the time. Great piece. Thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure. Take care.
Good stuff. Bill Scheer. Make sure you check out his Washington Monthly piece. We'll get links out on how you can do that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.